Welcome to Inside Jag Nation, a weekly podcast that gives you an in-depth look at the South Alabama Jaguars. You can find a new podcast uploaded weekly online at usajaguars.com or take the podcast with you on your smartphone by subscribing for free on iTunes. Just search South Alabama Jaguars.
Welcome to Inside Jag Nation, the weekly podcast of the University of South Alabama Athletics. Joining us this week, and we appreciate his taking the time. I know you had to get in late last night coming back from the Sun Belt Conference Indoor Track and Field Championships, but we've got senior Yanlo Kutse. Yanlo, thanks for coming in today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's an honor to be on this podcast, the first ever podcast I've been on, so I'm excited for what's ahead.
Should I be?
I hope so. I'm looking forward to it, too. I had the fortune of sitting in on an interview you did with Tyrese Thomas when he wrote a feature last summer around the NCAA championship. So to be honest with you, I'm looking forward to it. I hope you are.
Excellent. Yeah, and I hope you guys listening are, too. It should be a humdinger.
So as I mentioned, you know, last night you finished your final competition officially as a collegian at South Alabama. You did score points for the team in the weight throw. You came in sixth place. Did you feel over the last couple days maybe any little sense of extra emotion knowing that this was going to be the final time you were competing as a Jaguar?
Absolutely. It's been coming for a while, the fact that that this would be my ending. In fact, long ago, we were planning this thing out as in we saw that I wanted to redshirt an outdoor season at one point so that I can finish on my preferred events, which are the outdoor events. But it turned out that I actually did them consecutively, and then I had this year where I'd finish on indoor. So I had to prepare differently and end on events that for South Alabama, which some of them, for example, the weight throw, I never did before I came to South Alabama. So it's something that's still relatively new to me and not necessarily that well suited to me. But interestingly enough, I've actually done shot put longer than I've done discus, for example. Discus I've thrown just over 11 years. I started when I was 11 or so. And in shot, I'd started the year before that. But yesterday was the very last time I probably will throw a shot. I don't plan on continuing that. It's just, well, one is simply I'm just not good enough to make it further with it. And two, I don't know if it's because of that or because of other reasons that I just don't enjoy it as much as, for example, throwing discus. But yeah, getting back to last night, it was not the way I really wanted to go out for South, but there were some issues with my training coming up. I've had a back injury since October, which, you know, I hope we can get it fixed now that I'm done with competing for South. That really hampered my preparation for, I think it might have affected the shot, really. And then also the weight throw now, I'm glad that I got to score some points, but the aspirations I had at the beginning of the season were, I wanted to make nationals in the weight throw, which if I improved as much as I did the year before, I would have. So it was not a totally unreasonable proposition. But it ended up not quite working out that way. So my final conference was not what I would have wanted it to be. But in the end, I got to do it with South Alabama on my chest and with my teammates who've been there from the start, coach supporting. So maybe in that sense, it was a victory. But at least I went down, would we say, in flames, or say went down, or went out. Yeah, let's say I went out with the people that have been there, at least the USA journey from the start. And that's good enough for me.
So, like you said, you never had that chance to redshirt. So the team will continue competing with the outdoor season starting here in a couple of weeks. You're obviously going to remain in school and finish up and get your degree in May. So what do you do? Do you just practice? I know, and we'll talk about it a little later in terms of competing beyond college, but do you have the ability to compete as an individual and still travel with these guys? You know, what do you look at the next couple months?
Yeah, interestingly enough, right after this podcast, I'll actually meet with my coach to talk about exactly the rest of my season and what I can and cannot do. Because my understanding is now that I'm not, my eligibility is up. I can't train at the same time as everybody else. If I do train, I have to find a totally different time slot to do that. So really, some of that is unsure, and much of it is dependent on my back situation. Because I want to get an MRI just to, and the doctor mentioned that long ago, that after the season we should probably do that just to make sure exactly what is wrong. Because in that sense, if it comes out, you know, it's serious, then I probably won't compete the remainder of the season. I'll hopefully not vegetate, find something to keep myself active. Because, you know, I like to eat 3 plates of food every time I go to the calf, and I do that because I exercise often, and if I don't, I'll have to reduce that to 1 or 2 plates, and that will be sad. So I must find a way to keep myself active should that happen. However, let's say it's a mild thing, then we'll do rehab for it, and I'll continue to train to some degree for discus, and I'll have some season. And yes, it probably will be unattached. Well, will be unattached. Unattached, competing for my own self. It's really, I don't know if I should go into this yet of what I will do. Oh, okay.
Well, I mean, that really leads me into competition. I know we talked in the past. There are hopes and dreams of competing internationally for South Africa, and so what's like the next competition coming up that you could do that, and what kind of time frame are you looking at for keeping in shape and progressing towards that goal?
Right. So just like the current situation I'm in, where I'm unsure whether exactly I'll continue training right away or whether I have to shut it down for a little bit. In August, there's 2 really big competitions. One is the World Championships in track and field. It's a flagship competition other than the Olympic Games. It'll be in London, England. And then the other one is the World Student Games, which will be in, I think it's in Taiwan or somewhere in the Far East. So the problem is, though, with the World Championships, it's harder to qualify for that. But it's at a really good time. It's right before the next school starts again in the fall. And then the other one is during school, but it's easier for me to qualify for that. And it's something, it's not just easier, but I really want to do that as well. But the problem is, if I get into the grad school that I hope to, I don't know if I can just leave for 2 weeks to go and compete in Asia. So that's the problem. Ideally, I'd like to go qualify for the World Championships, do that, then come back, go to school, don't have to worry about missing class or whatever for track. But it's quite uncertain at this point, because I've not actually been accepted into graduate school yet. Actually, next Friday is a really big day for me. It's an interview day. It's like an 8-hour long ordeal, shall we say, where I have to strut my stuff and hopefully be good enough to be accepted. And I'll only find out maybe the next week or a few weeks after that whether I get in. So there are a few caveats as far as this is concerned, but if all goes perfectly, which usually it doesn't, but let's say it does, then I'll be preparing for meets in August.
Okay. Now, there's a lot on your plate: graduation, getting into grad school, these competitions you've had your eye on for a while. Have you put your mind to how long you want to compete and what ultimately you want to achieve in competition before you retire from that?
Right. So it's basically dependent on a few things. One is, do I keep progressing? If I keep improving, I see no reason why I should stop. However, you know, staying injury-free is a big thing. So I've been relatively blessed in that sense that I've never had a major injury that, oh, I have to sit out for 3 months or 6 months. The things I've had were either 1 or 2 weeks, or I have to, like, this back issue, I just deal with it as I go along. So it's dependent on that. And third, it's maybe the biggest one, I'm not sure how rigorous grad school will be now. I've heard horror stories of every waking moment you'll be doing it. But then again, I feel I've kind of done that in undergrad before. Some semesters where I took 20 credits, that was challenging. It's, you had no weekends, you had no free time. Well, okay, maybe 11 o'clock at night, you got about a half an hour that you could do whatever you wanted to. So it's not totally new to me. So I'm not really, that's not a daunting prospect at all. But basically it's dependent on those things and just how long I still like doing it. I mean, if there comes a day, even if I keep improving and I get to a certain level and I feel, you know, it's just this sport, it doesn't bring me the same joy as before, it's too taxing on me, I might stop with it. But for now, I do plan on continuing or trying to continue until the next Olympiad, which will be in Tokyo in 2020. If I qualify and make it, and I still think, you know, this might be a viable thing which I can keep myself busy with, I'll keep going on with it. But if it doesn't go well, then maybe that would be the end for me.
And you brought it up. You don't have to answer if you want. Obviously, you're going to continue in graduate school. I'm curious if you have, even if it's still a list of options of schools you're applying to, and if you can't talk about it because you're worried about that interview coming up, I respect that. But ultimately, how much further do you want to go in education? I mean, do you just want a master's? Do you want a doctorate? And what are your plans educationally?
Well, to say it plainly, I am applying for a doctorate program, actually, and that's the interview that's going to happen next week. There's a chance. I'm more of an outsider to make it at this point. I'm not really one of the top choices, I think. Really, I'm just speculating at this point. I really don't know. I like to see myself always as a dark horse, I guess, for getting for competitions and then also for academics, so that I rather over-prepare. So I'm saying that I don't have much to lose, but I have everything to gain. So if I prepare really well, even for an interview such as this, which sport definitely helped me to get to that point, I can maybe upset some people, whether it was actually an upset or not, but I can maybe pull a few upsets and then good things can happen. But, you know, so at this point, that's unsure whether I'll make it in, but I've also applied for masters just in this case that I don't get in for this doctorate. And then I do hope to go on to doctorate eventually. That's what I'd like to do. It's a doctorate in psychology that I'd like to get, because I really like the college environment, and I've thought that I'd like to be a professor if possible. Now, you can say these kinds of things, oh, I want to be a professor, I want to be this or that, but I watched a TED talk once that said, in the United States, for every 6 doctorates that are conferred, there's only 1 faculty position available. So now we're talking about, it's really hard to get into graduate school. It's very hard to get a doctorate. And then now you're competing already with basically the cream of the crop, and you're saying, well, I want to beat 5 other people for this one thing. Well, that's not everyone wants to get be faculty, but yeah, that's going to be challenging. And being a faculty member itself, that's, well, I guess for some it's easy, if you're tenured, but to get to that point is very challenging. So, man, I'm just looking at a lot of work ahead of me, but it's I like that. I don't like being bored necessarily. I don't like not having something to do, even though when I do a lot of things, it feels as though I don't want to be doing all these things. But the moment you take that away, I feel so directionless. I feel that life has no meaning, or maybe not as nihilistic as that, but, you know, I like to be busy. And also, the reason why I want to go down this route of getting a doctorate in psychology and possibly being a faculty member, or maybe when I get to that point, I realize, well, no, I'd rather private practice, or I'd rather become an artist, whatever. You never know where life takes you, and that's what's so great about it. There's three things, I guess, beyond athletics that I've enjoyed that brings great contentment in my life, and one is to learn. Since a very young age, I've read science books, and I've been so fortunate enough that my parents gave me those opportunities. I had those books around to stimulate my interest in things such as astronomy and physics, and even though what I'm doing now has nothing to do with those things, ironically, but that I've always enjoyed learning. And so being in academia puts you on the forefront of learning. You have to learn, keep learning your whole life, basically, if you want to be someone of value in your field. And then secondly is to teach. I like the idea of gaining knowledge and then not just keeping that to myself, but in some ways disseminating that to other people, especially those that are still somewhat early along in their journey and that might benefit from that. And that's how this going for this degree would help me do that. And then what was the third thing? It was learning, teaching. No, I don't remember the third
thing. Two's good, though.
Yeah, but it's related to that anyway, which how going in this direction would help me to do that. And you get to be at the forefront. Maybe that's the third thing, research. So you get to be on the forefront of knowledge. Maybe you'll be so fortunate enough to discover something nothing has ever been discovered before. And the thing with knowledge is, and ideas are so magnificent. They can change, they've changed history, of course, and they change and lives, individual lives, not just societies and mega corporations, but they change individual lives and families as well. And that's the hope with going into something like psychology, is I want to discover ideas that help individual people. And maybe if it helps many individuals, it can help society and the world as a whole. And that is, to me, what's so amazing about research. It's arduous, it's difficult, but I think there's a lot of value in it if you're prepared to put those long hours into it.
We're visiting this week on Inside JAG Nation with Iyanlo Kutse from the men's track and field program. You've talked about the challenges and the work coming up ahead of you that you're looking forward to. Tell us about the challenges and the work that you've done. How much time and effort does it take to maintain a 4.0 grade point average while you're competing at an All-American level?
Well, in my case, I think it's different for each person, because some people, they look at, they read through their work once and they remember every single thing. Now, I'm not quite at that level. For me to do relatively well in athletics and academics, in the first place, it takes sacrifice. Now, sacrifice is a broad term. What do you sacrifice? The first thing is, maybe to a degree, yourself. We all have, especially at this age, I think, we all have drives to do certain things, more hedonistic things or impulsive things. But you have to curtail that to a degree. Not entirely, because you don't want to be the situation where all work and no play makes Jack a dull, or whoever a dull boy. You don't want to do it to that degree. So that was also challenging, is to not be so engrossed in work that I'm not human anymore. But sacrificing much of my own free time for the sake of either preparing or competing or training in athletics, and then also preparing for examinations, writing papers, studying, going to class and so on. And that was the crux for me, is sacrificing. But I've actually been doing that since high school. High school was at times harder actually than university, of how demanding the schedule had been, because we had, in my high school at least, there were test weeks, although they would be at the end of each term. Now, we didn't have semesters, we had four terms in the year.
And then at the end of those, there would be a 2 or 3 week block where you'd write all your tests. Now, you'd have 8 classes, but that doesn't mean 8 tests. Some classes have 3 tests for all exams for one. So you're talking about the range of 15 to 20 in the space of 2 weeks. So those weeks and periods prepared me so well to handle the rigors of college academics and athletics to the point where I've already been in the system. I've been prepared for this, so I just go back into that system that works, those principles that work for me. And before you know it, you've done numerous things.
So following up on the fact that you have a 4.0 GPA hit in your final semester, I want to take the time to give our listeners an idea of some of your academic accomplishments. Twice you've been named an academic All-American, which is a pretty high honor, but then last summer in Oregon at the national championship, you were selected to receive the NCAA Elite 90 Award, which is about as prestigious an award as there is. It goes to the individual with the highest GPA at competing at an NCAA championship. Tell us the feeling you had, what was running through your mind when you heard your name called and you're going up on the podium to receive this honor.
So I'll first say that, you know, when my name was called in the stadium, at that point, I'd already known that I would receive the reward award. So it wasn't necessarily a surprise at that point, but let's go back to when I found out for the first time. The previous year, I was at Nationals as well. 2015, I was at Nationals as well. And then I would see at one point someone would get an award that no one else got. And it was related to academics and highest GPA. And I thought, well, you know, if I could make it to Nationals next year and just keep my GPA as it is, not falter, maybe I could be fortunate enough to get to that point. And kept on working. And the following year, about 2 days before the competition, because I think I got mine on the first day of competition, and Nationals is 4 days long. So 2 days before that, or the day before, the coach told me, hey, they're going to give you the Elite 90 Award. And that was a tremendous moment, that specific moment, because I'd wanted it and I worked for it. Even though, you know, maybe 3 years before that first time I saw it, I never knew about the award. So I'd inadvertently been working for it, which is great. But then actually getting on the stage, well, I should say this first. So they tried to give me the award twice. The first time they did it, I think we missed our slot that we were supposed to go up on the field and get the award on the track and get the award. So I had to come back a little bit later, and I had to be dressed in a full warm-up, which, you know, for me it's a bit of effort to put all that clothes on. So I had to take it off, put it back on again, went up on the field. There was this podium that they have for where the athletes after their event, they'd have from 8th to 1st place, all go stand on that. So I got to go up, stand on the 1st place. At that point, I was hoping to stand on it again. It didn't quite work out like that, but at least I got to stand on that spot. And they mentioned that I was the award recipient. And it kind of gets surreal in that moment where you look about and you think about, when you, let's say in a movie or something, you see someone get an award, there's music playing, there's this dramatic music playing in the background, and there's lights, camera, action, all that. But in real life, it's just a continuation of what has been before, except you hear someone talking about you in the background, and there's a few hands clapping. But I mean, it's not about that. In the end, it's an object that'll gather dust, and might even be forgotten over time. So it's merely an object, but what it does, it itself is a piece of glass, but what it represents is a lot more than that. It represents the striving for something, and then the validation that
what you did was probably the right thing because you were recognized for doing what you thought was the right thing to do. And to me, that's more what it's about. It was telling me that I was on the right track. And that is what was so fantastic about the award for me.
So I want to go back to the recruiting process for you. I know in talking to Coach Brewski last year, he told us that he first contacted you with just a Facebook friend request. And I'm wondering, kind of, what's your reaction when you see that come in from a person you don't know? You know, how did you handle it and what was your response?
Well, so sometimes when people ask me, how did you get to the U.S. or why did you choose South? And then sometimes if I don't feel like giving a really long response, I would say, well, you know, I'm really thankful for Mark Zuckerberg because if he didn't create Facebook, I might not have been here today. Now, granted, email could have happened, but your email isn't necessarily posted up on the web, whereas your name is right there. So for him, I guess there's a bit of thanks for that. And really on Facebook, I'm not too strict on my profile. For me, as far as internet is concerned, I don't put anything on the internet that I wouldn't want others to see. So I don't feel like I have nothing to hide in a sense. Where some people are very, very private with what they have on the internet. Anyway, so it wasn't a big surprise to see this, see a new name. But maybe where he was from, that was a bit different. So I should note that back in 9th, 10th grade, from then on, I had the desire to go to the United States to study because South Africa does have a support system for athletes beyond high school, but you basically need to be an Olympian already if you want any substantial amount of support. Whereas in the U.S., there's so many different universities with so many different leagues, and that everyone has their specific goals and looking for different kinds of athletes. So I knew there'd be a better chance of me to get better support in the U.S. And then so from 2011 onwards, when I was in 11th grade, I started getting these friend requests. Coach Brewski was not the first one, actually. Would also not be the last one, but he would be the most important one, even though at that time I didn't know it. Because, you know, if you're not familiar with the nooks and crannies of a country, whereas, you know, in the case of South Alabama, at least back then, it wasn't as well known as it is now. I think we've grown tremendously in the past few years. That I have no idea what this college was. I mean, I recognize the state of Alabama and then direction south next to it. So I think I didn't initially take it as seriously. Though I was a bit surprised by the fact that the coach knew some Afrikaans, which is my home language. So maybe him knowing that added a bit of intrigue to it. So I never really let that prospect go. And before long, South was where I wanted to be. And if I could go back to myself in that moment and say, you know, forget about these names that you're more familiar with. They're not where you want to be or where you're going to be. Just keep on pursuing that guy from the USA that knows a bit of your language, however he did that, and you'll end up at a place where you'll be really happy.
So, growing up, you had experience in international competition, so there was travel involved. It wasn't something you were completely unfamiliar with, but how much of it did you do, and how much did it help you prepare to make the move to the United States?
Yeah, so my country isn't that large. Now, it's significantly smaller than the United States, but it's still a little bit bigger than Texas. So when you're going from one end to the other, that's still a day's drive worth. And sometimes that did happen as far as track was concerned. But I was fortunate enough that my parents were from the very first track meet I did until I went to college that they could attend virtually every single one that I ever went to. The one or two that they didn't go to was because of financial reasons. So I was always blessed to have that tremendous support from them. And sometimes I would travel with them instead or in lieu of the team, you see. But other times we had to travel with the team, for example, provincial teams going to nationals. And then that would be, now, parents' car is somewhat more comfortable than most buses we have. Buses, when I say buses, I mean there's no air conditioning, not necessarily reading lights. The backside of the seats are wooden. So if you try to rest your legs against it, your knees will get sore after a little bit. So it's a tad less comfortable, let's say, than the buses we have here on campus, where you have Wi-Fi, air conditioning, soft seats. And sometimes those bus rides would go 10 plus hours. And so I was well prepared for long, long trips here, where we'd sometimes go up to places such as Nashville, which is about 6-7 hours away. But having done longer trips in less comfortable conditions overnight, I was well prepared for it, I think. And it certainly helped for such long trips. And besides, I also had flown to Europe beforehand. I competed in 3 meets there when I was in high school. And those are long flights. Those are not 2-hour hops from one place to the other. It's long hauls. And going from South Africa to the United States, if you get a direct flight, it's between 16 and 18 hours, depending on the route. So, you know, I know how to sit in a plane for a long time or sit in a chair for a long time, even though I don't like doing that, but at least I'm able to, I think.
Well, I can't even imagine a 16 to 18 hour flight. I mean, you've probably got to get up, move around the plane just for your sanity's sake.
Economy as well.
But when you think back now, because of the school system in South Africa, you didn't finish up secondary or high school till December. Mm-hmm. And that meant that you came to South Alabama in January of 2013. Tell us what you remember. What were your expectations? Whether it was direct or not, that time, you've got a long day of travel and you're coming to the United States and you're going to be here for a while. What was running through your mind? What did you expect when you got here?
Those were those very early days of 2013 were some of the most impactful days and some of the most memorable days of my life. For various reasons, it's the tremendous emotion that was involved in those days. So, for example, leaving, and I should say, the travel takes multiple days usually. It's rare that you get just in 24 hours can make it from there to here. But being at the in Cape Town International Airport, saying goodbye to my parents for 4 or 5 months, which I'd never been away from them for that long. That was really challenging. I mean, seeing your parents cry, it's one of the hardest things out there, and you yourself cry. So you're leaving with a heavy heart. There's actually a lot more telling you to stay, almost. All these circumstantial things are trying to say, no, just stay and comfort them or something. But you know that you've had this goal, and that you feel almost as though you were destined to pursue this goal, even though you don't have anything over there. So it was, in a sense, leaving all I had behind, though not quite as dramatic as people from the past who, let's say, went on a sail to distant lands, who really had to leave everything behind. But it was similar to that. And maybe through that experience, I got to know what it was like for many people back in history of humanity that had to leave home for good, possibly even. So I left all of that behind and then took the multiple flights, came in through New York, almost didn't make it through customs because I couldn't find one important document. And so that was a really stressful moment where I was on the ground rummaging through my folder I had where all the important documents were and just couldn't find this paper. And for a bit I thought, wow, I came all this way only to be turned back. And then I did find it and managed to go through customs. But the hardest, maybe even harder than saying goodbye to everyone, was that last flight I had from, I think it's New York, let's say Atlanta, and then Mobile. That was definitely one of the hardest flights I'd ever taken. It was I cried profusely, shall I say, because you know at that point there was no more turning back. You know that there's much sadness for you leaving. But at the same time, through those tears, there was this feeling or desire, I shall say, within me, or sense of direction that, you know, this is difficult, but you just keep pushing through this. Because you were meant to do this. There's always, to some degree, I felt it was almost like a destiny that I had to go to the United States. That you just keep pushing through this feeling, because what you're going to have here will be so much better than anything you can imagine. And to a degree, that is what happened. So since then, I had ambitions of becoming NCAA champion, and by the end of the college career, make it to the Olympic Games. So I didn't do any of those things. However, in spite of not achieving athletically what I set out to do, because I was quite one-track-minded at that point, it was still this whole experience, these past 4 years, just over 4 years, I wouldn't trade it for anything. It has helped me grow like nothing ever else has before. I've gone from being a boy to, well, I don't know if I'm worthy yet to be called a man, but let's say man in quotation marks. And if I could go back to myself and tell that it's going to be more than anything you ever imagined that you'll get out of this. The personal growth, not just track-wise, but as a human, socially. That's why you should keep going. And luckily I did, even though I wasn't there to tell that to myself. So it worked out well in the end, I think.
We're visiting this week on Inside JAG Nation with Janlo Kutse from the men's track and field program. And you just said you didn't accomplish the goals you set out to athletically. And I think from an outsider's perspective, you shortchange yourself a little bit. And I'm going to clue our listeners in at this point. In the course of 4 years, now, you did set school records in the discus during the outdoor season, the weight throw during the indoor season. You're in the top five in three other disciplines on school's all-time performance list. Well, that's the school. Four times you won the discus at the Sun Belt Championship. Four times you qualified for the East Region in the discus. Twice you made it to the NCAA championship, and last year, in your senior year of outdoor, you were an All-American, first-team All-American. So those are some pretty high accolades not everyone accomplishes, and maybe to you, you had a lofty goal and you fell short, but there are a lot of other people, I think, that would take that resume.
I'm sure many would, and you know, I would too. When I say I missed my goals, it's the initial ones I set up. So what I normally do is I set goals or standards for myself that I think in the back of my head I know they're unlikely. Or they're not unlikely, but things are going to have to go my way for me to achieve them. So they're almost as though like you're lying on the couch and you're reaching for the remote, but it's just beyond your fingertips. That's how I tend to set my goals. So not achieving them is, in a sense, almost expected. But that's not necessarily a bad thing for me. Because then I know, you know, I almost reached that remote, but I managed to get to a spot where if it wasn't just outside of my reach, I might not have inched over, wouldn't have reached before. And so all these things that came out of my career, I'm thankful for them all. I'm happy about them. Obviously, like I said, I would have wanted to do a little bit more than I did. I really sincerely wanted to win the nationals, and I could have last year. But and I can give you a list of excuses, but there's no point in it in doing that, because in the end you have to take kind of responsibility for what happened, whether it was totally under your control or not. And but regardless, the goals I had was just discus wise. So I never thought about weight throw, that I'd do that, because I didn't really know about it before university. I'd heard of it, but I'd never done it. So, for example, setting the school record and that must have been one of my most cherished memories, or athletic memories, Because here's this event that you picked up a little less than 3 years ago, which in track terms is a very short time, because the best athletes in the world are more than a decade into their event by the time they reach an elite level. So, yeah, maybe I fell short of some goals, but I achieved some that I never set out to do, but which became magnificent in their own right. For example, that the weight throw record and throwing hammer beyond 60 meters, because I never did that in high. Well, I didn't really do that in high school. So things happened that where I had weight room records as well that I didn't imagine I would do, and I set and I achieved them. So yeah, I'm happy with how things turned out eventually.
So in looking at the actual numbers, and I'm talking about the discus now, which was, you know, which is your primary event. As a freshman, your best throw that year was about 57 and a half meters. When you set the school record your senior year, you went just over 62. So, you know, in distance, you improved your mark by approximately 15 feet over the course of your career. What did you do to make that kind of improvement over time?
Actually, coming in from high school, I had a PR of 53 meters, so it went up almost 9 from let's say, coming in with the 53 to ending up with the 62. Well, as far as improvement in discus is concerned, I really love this quote. So, at the beginning of the Second World War, well, towards the beginning, it had already begun at that point, a certain Winston Churchill was appointed the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom. It was on the eve of the Battle of Britain, and he was making a speech to the nation, and he said that in his service to Britain, he has nothing to offer but blood, toil, tears, and sweat. And as any athlete or anyone that works tremendously hard and whatever they do would know, that success is very much that. There's other things involved as well, but the great brunt of it, 99% perspiration, that idea from, was it Edison, I think, that is eventually what it takes. And I applied that philosophy in the discus throw as well. Now, I should note that it's one thing to work hard, but you can work hard in a unintelligent fashion as well. So let's say you try to knock a wall down. If you use your fist to knock it down, you're working hard. You have to go through a lot of pain to do that. But it's a bit more efficient to pick up the hammer next to you and then knock down the wall, right? So working hard is one thing, but you also need to do it with the right tools, as in the right support system, surround yourself with the right people, and with the right mindset. So I also aim to optimize those things, as in use technology in my practices. As I throw discus, I would video myself and analyze that. The lifting programs we have at South are set up by competent people who are familiar with exercise science, so there's well-established scientific principles that go into these things. I would say it's that. It's a tremendous amount of hard work, but there's also a bit of brain involved. Not that I have that tremendous of a brain, but I try to apply that to my sport, and I think it's worked so far, so hopefully it can keep on working.
So I want to ask now, and to give our listeners an idea of what a day is like for you, walk us through one, start to end, where you go, what you do, and everything that entails, and just how much you put into it to do what you did both in the classroom and in competition.
Right, so the thing with college is that every semester you have a different schedule, and so that places different demands on you. But I will go back to my fall 2015 semester, where I took 20 credits, which was probably my hardest semester. Now, we were in the off season, however, I should note that usually in the off season you train quite a bit more than you do in the in season. Where in season is just sharpening the skills and smoothing out the rough edges. That's what I want to say. Whereas off season is you're still building that base for what's coming afterwards. And I guess this is kind of the most dramatic semester I had in terms of how busy it was. But 20 credits, so we're talking about, what's that, six, seven classes a week. In the mornings, you get up at between 7 and 8, probably around 7 usually, and then have an 8 a.m. class. So breakfast before that, and I think there'd be three or so consecutive classes, lunchtime, by 1 o'clock, I'd have practice for 3 to 4 hours, and then I think on one of those days there'd be a fourth class at night as well. Sometimes there wasn't one, but then after practice, for example, if it was a discus day, I'd go and, or a throwing day, I should say, I would go and analyze my technique, as I mentioned a little bit earlier, and that can take quite a bit of time. Sometimes it's 5 minutes, you look at it once and you think, I'm okay, and I know what I need to do. Other times, if you're really in a pinch, you spend 1 to 2 hours looking at every little detail, trying to compare it with what you did before. Because I have throws of myself from back in 11th grade, so that's from 2011 up to now, 2017. So I have a big database of myself that I can compare myself to. And, you know, there's the internet that I can compare myself to people who have achieved way more success and have been consistent at a world level for a long time. So doing that takes quite a bit of time as well. And then homework, dinner, homework. And then it's almost midnight, so it's time to go to bed. So maybe there's, you know, if you exclude eating at the cafe, which most days that was my entertainment, to go sit at the table with a bunch of interesting people. It's maybe 10 to 30 minutes in the day where I could really just do whatever. And even then, you feel guilty because you know you could have done something school-related, or you should have started applying for this or that. So there's all, that's the one thing about college. It's so flexible, but there's always something to do. So even when you're enjoying yourself, you think, I could have been doing this. So you have to make a bit of a mental switch to say that when I play, I play with heart. I don't play with a project in the back of my mind, or else you're not going to enjoy it. And the same with working, you know, you go, when you do work, you don't think about the play, unless that's your driving force. You work to play, but you, so that you do that job as well as you can to the very best of your ability. And I think that's what that typical day that I kind of turned into a self-help lesson now, but that would be a typical day for me in my most difficult semester.
So I want to go back to earlier in your childhood and ask, you know, you got into competing in track around 10, 11, somewhere in that range, if I remember correctly. You remember why you started competing in the sport? And beyond that, did you always compete in the throws, or did you kind of do everything and then in time narrow it down to the throws?
So my very first experience with track was really thanks to the schooling system we had. So primary school in South Africa is from 1st to 7th grade, and high school is from 8th to 12th grade. Track is one of the top 5 sports in our country. And when I say that, I don't mean that there's a Super Bowl-like event where millions of dollars go into it. It just means that it's the sport that has among the most people that participate in it, especially at the school level, because every school has one track meet at the very beginning of the school year in January. So our school year is from January to December, where pretty much everyone that is able to competes in at least some of the events. So since a young age, I've had to do various track events. But, you know, over time, you start to realize that this whole running thing is not quite working out for me. The gap between myself and the leaders are just growing every time I run. And then you say, no, I'm not a good runner. But then in the other events, in the field events, the more explosive events, you see, well, okay, I'm around these people who do relatively well, and even in some of them, I'm actually ahead. How can this be? And so, you know, as a young person that is competitive, you like this whole idea that you can be slightly ahead of everyone else, and you keep pursuing those. And so those were the throwing events for me, I think, even though I don't really remember the exact first moments I had in track, so it might be a bit of conjecture, this. However, discus itself, so that's not offered until you get to sixth grade. But my uncle was a coach, a throws coach, and a geography teacher at my future high school. I didn't know it at the time because we lived very far away, so there was no thought of going there for high school. But he came to our house once, and he brought a few discuses and shots, and he asked me to throw them. I don't know why. I can't remember why he asked me to throw them, but I did. And for some reason, I just kept on going and going. And then next thing I know, I was at nationals, sixth grade nationals that year, and I got a third place, which was wow. I had only been doing this for a few months, and look how far I've gotten already. So I don't really know why I kept on going. I think it's just maybe that every time I threw it, it went a little bit further, or there was something about the mastery element of it that, if I do these things, it'll improve and it'll improve. And seeing that consistent improvement was maybe the driving force, at least initially. And maybe still is today why I kept on going. And as far as that, so that's track. Other sports I did primary school was cricket and rugby. And then obviously we played other sports in PE, but actually games were those two. I played quite a bit of rugby. Because back then, you know, I wasn't as set on a track as I am now, but you know, I thought, well, maybe I could play rugby in high school. Which, when I came to high school, the only other sport that I did, or only competitive sporting event that I ever attended, was one rugby game that I played in. Otherwise, it's just been a track for me. So I specialized very soon in my career. And so for any parents that are watching, or young athletes maybe, do not follow me in that regard. That's not the right thing necessarily. Maybe it worked out for me to an extent. Even though when I came to South, I was not very that athletic. I've become more athletic since coming to South because our training is more varied. Where when I was in high school, I just trained discus, and anything helped me with that. So it was a tad uncoordinated and such. So don't follow me in that regard. Play lots of sports until 10th or 11th grade, and then you can really start to narrow down on the things you actually like. That's what I would say.
Now, I know this may be, maybe it's a difficult question to ask, because your last competition at South was just in the last 24 hours. Maybe you haven't had time to properly reflect, but I'm going to ask anyway and take a chance. But when you think back to your time here over the last 4 years, what stands out to you as what you think you're proudest of? What's a favorite moment for you?
Right. You know, I mentioned earlier that I achieved the school weight throw record, which was beyond my imagination before I came here. And then also last year at Florida Relays, I threw the 62, which was within 9 feet of qualifying for the Olympic Games. And I've always wanted to, since maybe the 2004 Olympic Games, I've had some desire, no, not to, 2008 Games, I've had some desire to compete there one day. But in spite of that, in spite of how close I've gotten to achieving a childhood desire of mine, my best memories at South weren't necessarily in the circle or in competitive gear. It was outside of track. It was in the dining hall. It was in the classroom. It was when I went back home and my parents would see how I've changed. All those little things. It's the personal development and social development that that happened to me during these years, which, regardless of what happened in track, for that I would always be thankful for, and which I'll carry a lot longer with me in a daily sense, whereas that how I've developed as a person here at South will be something that informs my decisions and my interactions with others more so than anything else. So it's hard when people ask for a favorite memory, because I couldn't go back to say, okay, on 14 April, 9 a.m., 2014, this happened. It's an amorphous being that has been drifting about in my experience here at South, which has come to form the person that I am today and that the person I will be in the future. And in the end, personal growth is my favorite memory at South.
Visiting this week on Inside JAG Nation with Yanlo Kutse from the men's track and field program. Really appreciate giving us the time, knowing coming back late last night from the Sunbelt Indoor Championship. But before we let you go, I want to ask you some quick questions. Just the first thing that you think of that comes to mind. You know, obviously with your schedule, both in the classroom and competition, I would say free time was not very available to you. But when you had a little of it, what's your favorite thing to do?
I really enjoy going on YouTube and watching various informational, educational, and scientific videos.
What's your favorite sport outside of track?
That's a difficult one, but I would say cricket, probably.
What's the best athletic event you've ever attended as a fan?
So, being a sports person, it might sound ironic that I've been to very few professional athletic events, actually. So, my most cherished memory as a fan must be when, really actually 2 days. One was when Mississippi State came to South Alabama back in 2014 in Ladd People Stadium. Stadium was packed. It was amazing. It was one of the best days to be a Jag. And then also actually last semester when we played Troy here at South. Was so packed, so many people, and even though we lost on both occasions, it was still sporting memories that, in my experience so far, is things I'll keep with me for a very long time.
If you get a chance to go to one athletic event you've never been to before, what's at the top of your bucket list?
I should say it was football in the previous one. Okay, but so events that I'd like to go to, let's assume this is not bound to time, so I can go back in time. So actually, I'd like to go to the ancient Olympic Games. I've read a book about that before. It's quite different than it is today. Apparently, it was a lot more like a festival. So you would combine the world's biggest music and arts festivals, and there'd be politicians trying to further their agenda, combine that with sport and food from every corner of the globe, and you have this super massive festival that represents all that humanity is. So if I could go watch any event, I'd love to go spend those five days in Olympia back in 100 BC.
If you get a chance, you're going on a dream vacation, where's the first spot you're going to?
Oh, absolutely Israel. And that's because I'm a Christian and I'd love to see the lands that inspired the events of the people in the Bible.
What's your favorite movie?
It's a tie for first place, Forrest Gump. And funny enough, as a young child, when I watched that, I didn't realize I would end up pretty much in the state of my hero, Forrest Gump. And actually, I know some parts of Forrest Gump were filmed in Mobile. And then the other one would be also tied for first, but slightly below Forrest Gump, is Into the Wild.
What's your favorite book?
The Bible.
Who's your favorite musical artist?
I listen to various kinds of music, primarily different forms of rock and indie and maybe a little bit of classical. But at this moment, if I had to choose one, I would say the alternate rock band, The National.
And down the line, when out in Hollywood, some producer and director decide that they're going to make a movie about your life story, what actor is going to play the lead role of Yanlo Kutse?
So I think this is best left up to the director. So my director will be the people who've been in my life. And I've been described as two people, primarily as one. So some people on campus have described me as Thor, and recently that has been portrayed by Chris Hemsworth, so I suppose it could be him. But I've also been described as, actually, in my first year at South, I grew out a beard for a whole year. It got tremendously long. And the day I shaved it off, one of my teammates remarked, "Wow, you look like Brad Pitt looked in Legends of the Fall." He had, that was when he was younger and he had really long hair. So I guess we'll have to have a fight or something between those two to determine who would play me in the movie.
We've been chatting with Jan-Lo Kutse this week in Inside JAG Nation. Really appreciate the time and enjoyed it, and look forward to seeing you around campus the rest of the spring as you go on and earn your degree in May.
Thank you. I really enjoyed this moment too, and appreciate everyone that managed to listen up to this point. That's an achievement in and of itself.
Inside JAG Nation is a production of South Alabama Athletics. Any rebroadcast or distribution of this podcast without the express written consent of South Alabama Athletics is strictly prohibited. Remember, you can find a new episode of Inside JAG Nation every week on usajaguars.com, or have them automatically uploaded to your smartphone by subscribing for free on iTunes. Keep up to date with the Jags by following us on Twitter with @USAJaguarSports and @JagNationUSA. Thanks for listening, and go Jags!